We stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Someday soon. Okay, may we have the roll call, please?
Good evening, Commissioners. I'll take the roll call. Chair Hartwig?
I am present.
Vice Chair Hurd?
Present.
Commissioner Castillo?
Present.
Commissioner Griggs Murphy?
Present.
Commissioner Ann Griffith?
Present.
Commissioner Jung Lee?
Yes.
And I understand Commissioner Montgomery is excused this evening. Thank you.
Do we have a motion to approve last month's minutes?
So move.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any abstentions?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, carries.
Oh,
one abstention? Okay. We have one abstention. Carries. Do we have any modifications to the agenda? I do not know of any. We hear of none, so there will be no modifications to the agenda. Moving on to new business, item A.
Good evening, Commissioners. Item A is nomination for the Oakland Housing Authority participant William Mays to serve as the OHA representative for the City of Oakland's Community Police Advisory Board. In your memo, there's some short background of who's done it. It was originally done by Officer Malcolm Williams, Jerry Williams. You may know him, who retired some years ago. We are recommending Mr. Mays replace the outgoing nominee, who actually is terming out. She's done a wonderful job for the Housing Authority, and I'm really grateful for her service. And I thought maybe, Mr. Mays, if you want to come introduce yourself and say hello to the board. We are named in the resolution, as you see, to name a participant. I'm grateful that Mr. Mays has agreed to do it, and he's a longtime West Oakland resident, and I think a wonderful value to the Resident Advisory Board as well. Mr. Mays?
Hello, board. My name is William Mays. I'm also on the Resident Advisory Board, and I've worked with Oakland Parks and Rec for over 20 years, from my youth on up. I used to run the Oakland Housing Authority after school program at Peralta and Tassafaraga from 96 to 2000. And then I moved on to Cal, and then I moved over into the residence. I've been in Peralta Village for over 16 years now, and I'm really becoming active in my community. So.
Very good. Thank you.
Terrific. Thank you, Mr. Mays. I appreciate it.
So we need a motion.
Yeah.
We have a motion.
I'll make that motion and completely congratulate and so appreciate Mr. Mays's ability to step up to the task. Thank you very much.
A second. We have a moved. It's moved and it's been seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or abstentions? Carries unanimously. You are on the board.
Thank you. Congratulations, Mr. Mason. Appreciate your service.
And yes, thank you. Thank you for your service and your willingness to continue moving forward with it.
Wonderful.
Okay, so item B.
Item B is part of a two-part. There's item B and C that are related to the development, and we thought maybe we'd do a presentation on both of them combined because they are very much related. And then consider the items. Item B, just for the record, is consideration of a resolution considering the environmental impact effects of the execution of a purchase, sale, ownership, and other necessary agreements for acquisition of a joint interest in land with the City of Oakland for development of affordable housing at Brooklyn Basin. So I'll turn this over to Denny, who will walk us through. She's been working on this deal now for a year or so. Is it on your computer?
I don't know if it does not work. Okay.
I wanted to point.
Oh, you can't point that.
Okay.
So just.
Good evening, Chair Hartwig, Vice Chair Hurd, members of the Commission. My name is Denny Adania. I'm a Senior Program Manager in the Office of Real Estate Development, and I'm here tonight to present Brooklyn Basin. Brooklyn Basin is formerly known as Oak to Ninth.
Yeah, just talk right into the mic and we'll pick you up.
Brooklyn Basin, formerly known as Oak to Ninth, is a new master planned community located along the Oakland Estuary, southeast of Jack London Square. I wanted to show it in this aerial photograph. It's most of the site is located in this photograph, except there's a portion that's obscured by the Brooklyn Basin label. So that's the northernmost part of the development site. It also includes this next lighter parcel, most of that parcel wrapping around Clinton Basin, and then all of that large parcel on the bottom of the photograph. You can see the 880 Nimitz Freeway running alongside of the development site as well. Sorry, one other thing I wanted to mention is the northwesternmost boundary of the development site tracks along Fallon Street, so that going into downtown Oakland, and the southeasternmost boundary of the development site tracks along 10th Avenue to give a sense of the size of the site. So the Brooklyn development the Brooklyn Basin development site includes approximately 64 acres of waterfront property along the Embarcadero, and it also includes 4 acres of affordable housing as well. The master developer is Zarzion OHP 1 LLC, whose local partners are the Signature Development Group and Reynolds and Brown. Reynolds and Brown is a Bay Area-based industrial and commercial builder, and Signature Development Group is based here in Oakland. The fully entitled master plan includes 3,100 residential units of both for sale and rental units, and that includes 465 affordable units. Mm-hmm. There's approximately 200,000 square feet of commercial and retail space distributed throughout the community, and approximately 32 acres of a variety of parks and open space that range from pedestrian promenades, bikeways, playgrounds, active parks, waterfront plazas, and restored wetlands. The plan also includes the restoration of 2 marinas, the Clinton Basin Marina and the Fifth Avenue Marina, which is, it's hard to show, but it's at the end of Fifth Avenue, which is sort of coming straight into the site. In 2006, the City of Oakland entered into a development agreement with the master developer, which at the time was Oakland Harbor Partners and Signature Development. They are now ZOHP. And that included a variety of negotiated community benefits. One of the key community benefits required that OHP sell 2 parcels to the city at a discounted rate in order to develop the 465 units of affordable housing. It also required that OHP contribute an additional $2 million towards the development of those units. Parallel to those negotiations with OHP were the city's negotiations with the Oak to Ninth Community Benefits Coalition, which was and is a group of community organizations such as the East Bay Asian Youth Center, Asian Pacific Environmental Network, and Urban Strategies. The outcome of these negotiations with the community coalition were memorialized in the 2006 cooperative agreement, which imposed numerous additional requirements and details upon the affordable housing requirement, such as the depth of affordable housing, the unit types, the targeted populations, and the implementation schedule. MidPay Housing Corporation was selected by Signature Development Group, acting on behalf of ZOHP, as the master affordable housing developer, and it was approved by the City of Oakland in June of 2015. MidPen Housing was founded in 1970, and since then they have developed and or manage over 8,000 homes throughout Northern California. They work in 11 counties throughout the region, and with offices in Foster City, Oakland, Santa Rosa, and Watsonville, MidPen is one of the largest and most productive affordable developers in the state. The 465 units will be built on two parcels, parcels F and parcel A, that are highlighted on your plan, and those entail four distinct affordable projects. On parcel F, it's approximately 1.7 acres, and there are two projects there. Project number one is 110 units for low-income seniors. Project number two is 101 units for low-income seniors, low-income families. On parcel A, two more projects on 2.3 acres. Project number three is 124 units for families, and project four, 130 units for low-income families. The unit mix will include a balance of ones, twos, and three-bedroom units within certain stipulated guidelines that were negotiated in the cooperative agreement. And those are no fewer than 30% of all of the units will be three bedrooms, and no less than 20% of the units will be two bedrooms. The range of affordability is 30 to 60% of the area median income. The estimated schedule, so projects one and two, and those are on parcel F for seniors and for families, those will be developed in tandem, and those are up first. They are projected to break ground in December of 2018 and to be complete in October of 2020. Project number three is a family project, and now this is moving over to parcel A. That project is projected to start in summer of 2019 and to be complete in spring of 2021. And the last, project number four, is a family project as well, projected to begin immediately thereafter in the summer of 2021 and to be complete in the spring of 2023. So this is an aerial rendering of parcel F, the first parcel that's up for redevelopment. Along the top side face of the building is Embarcadero, and the face of the building that's sort of facing us is 8th Avenue. So the tip of the triangle, I'm sorry, I can't point to this with my pointer, is the senior housing wing, and that's project one. The entrance is in this lower section of the building, this sort of lower section of the building right towards the tip of the triangle. And there's a podium level and then five stories of residential above the podium, so six stories total. The family project is immediately, it is adjacent and connected to the senior project, the bottom part of the triangle, with the entrance towards, I think that's 7th Street or 7th Avenue. Both of the buildings will share a podium and a parking structure at grade. This is a view looking from the senior site towards the family site along 8th Avenue. Okay, CEQA. So this board is required to make findings under the California Environmental Quality Act because it is a public agency approving a part of this Brooklyn Basin project. The City of Oakland, as the lead agency for CEQA purposes, has primary responsibility for CEQA compliance. The Housing Authority, as the responsible agency, has a much more limited role. So for some background, the city certified the Environmental Impact Report, or the EIR, for the master plan for Brooklyn Basin back in June of 2006. And the city recertified the EIR with amendments in 2009. The EIR concluded that the implementation of the Brooklyn Basin master plan would result in a number of significant environmental effects. These effects included impacts to traffic, air quality, cultural resources, primarily related to the removal of the historic 9th Avenue terminal, as well as noise. The city reviewed alternative development scenarios with the developer, and as such, modifications were made to the overall development program. However, the EIR also concluded that it was not feasible to mitigate or minimize all of the environmental impacts to a less than significant level. But where it was feasible, the city did adopt a mitigation monitoring and reporting program, an MMRP. This plan imposed various measures on the site on the project to lessen or eliminate as many of those significant impacts and effects as feasible. Finally, the City of Oakland also adopted a statement of overriding considerations that the economic, legal, social, technological, environmental, and other benefits outweigh the significant effects. This was all documented in the EIR that was adopted by the city again back in 2006 and recertified in 2009. So before we move on, I would like to also note that pursuant to CEQA, no further environmental review is required when an EIR has been certified unless certain events and changes have occurred, such as substantial changes to the project or if there is new information. Because the authority's acquisition funding and approvals for Brooklyn Basin do not cause substantial changes to the project, no further environmental review nor any revisions to the EIR are required. I'd also like to note that just in July of 2017, the City of Oakland adopted a resolution itself in which it gave preliminary approval to the Housing Authority's participation in these affordable housing projects. And there, they also stated that the affordable housing projects had not undergone any changes that would require additional environmental review under CEQA. So the authority is here in its role as a responsible agency. Is permitted to take the discretionary actions, including approving and funding the acquisition, including approving and funding the acquisition documents to implement the project, provided that the authority adopts the city's CEQA findings and the MMRP as its own within the context of these acquisition approvals that the authority is now contemplating. And that is CEQA. It's quite a mouthful. Okay, so moving on, there are three acquisition documents that we are presenting tonight for this board's consideration. They are the purchase and sale agreement, the joint ownership agreement, and the master housing agreement. The PSA between the city and the authority defines the terms under which the authority will purchase its 50% tenant in common interest in parcels A and F, respectively, from the city for $10 million, subject to federal NEPA approval. The city will in turn apply the authority's $10 million contribution towards the development of those 465 units. NEPA approval by HUD is anticipated in September, next month. The second document is the joint ownership agreement between the city and the authority. It defines the terms under which the authority will jointly own parcels A and F. The JOA will govern all aspects of co-ownership of the property, including its fiscal management, operations, and disposition. And finally, the master housing agreement is a tri-party agreement. This is between the Housing Authority, the city, and MidPen Housing. It defines the general terms under which the four affordable projects will be pursued by the developer. It also provides the terms for separate lease, disposition, and development agreements that we will negotiate and enter into for each project. The LDDAs and the ground lease for each of those four projects will be submitted separately for this board's approval. And with that concludes my our staff report. I wanted to mention that we do have with us here tonight Michelle Brewer with Goldfarb and Lippman. She's also able to answer any questions about CEQA and the legal acquisition documents. We also have Krista Katz-Mulvey from the City of Oakland. She's been working on Brooklyn Basin for many years now. And Paula Munoz and Carlos Castellanos and Andrew Matzis are also here with us from MidPen Housing. Be happy to entertain any questions.
Questions?
Going back to the mouthful that is CEQA.
Yes.
I am curious, just since I have Houston on my mind, if any of the conditions that are being mitigated are around sea level rise or how resiliency is taken into account given the location of this development and whether or not there's any difference that is made between those parcels that are affordable and those that are not affordable in terms of whatever plans are put in place for resiliency.
Thank you for the question. It's a great question. Krista Mulvey might be able to provide more background as to whether sea level rise was considered in the CEQA. I am familiar with this issue because it did come up in the NEPA, which is something that the Housing Authority was engaged with the city and with MidPen this summer. And so it was something that we talked about quite a bit. It was a major consideration for the NEPA. So there are sea level rise considerations, and I will let Polo Munoz and Krista Mulvey talk a little bit more about the details of what our considerations were.
Good evening, Krista Katz-Mulvey with the City of Oakland's Housing and Community Development Department.
And Polo Munoz, Project Manager with MidPen Housing.
Yes. And so one of the things that came up in regards to the NEPA review was actually that there are draft floodplain maps coming out from FEMA that are not yet finalized that would have required elevating the site. And so what MidPen worked on were mitigation measures so that the affordable sites will be above grade for the new floodplains once they're adopted. And I'll let Polo fill in.
Sure, and I can add to that. So essentially, the aerial that Denny showed is actually not what's there anymore. The master developer has gone there and actually raised the elevation of the site quite a few feet. So a lot of the infrastructure is already there, the roads, and those are well above sea level in, I believe, the 50 to 100-year projections. The projects themselves, once they're constructed, they're actually their pads, their foundations, and the ground level is actually going to be also at that higher elevation level. So those issues are being mitigated by essentially the vesting tentative map that's been approved by the city that actually lays out the minimum elevation at which anything can be constructed there. So.
Who has questions?
Yeah. I can wait. Go ahead.
You have a question?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Go ahead.
Thank you. I have a question as to where the market rate housing of 241 units is being built, and also what services will be available on the site once the affordable housing projects 1 and 2 are developed. Will there be stores for shopping or other kinds of services?
Right, so I can also try to answer that. So with regards to the market rate side, it's really going to be the balance of the 465 units, the balance towards the 3,100 that are going to be market rate sites. The commercial component is going to be, if you're looking at the image that we have up right now, there's going to be some main roads, Brooklyn Basin Way, which is right in between Parcel F and Parcel A as you're coming down south, and also I believe it's Main Street, which is the street that runs along G and C, are going to have substantial commercial and retail space up to 200,000 square feet. Parcel G itself is going to be developed by Signature Development, and that itself is anticipated to have about 40,000 square feet of retail space and also a 400 space garage. So all those components are going to be part of the market rate development. The affordable housing, which is on Parcel F and Parcel A, those are going to be strictly affordable housing units. There's obviously it's going to be designed so that interface with the street is done in such a way that it really is cohesive with the entire project with eyes on the street. But there's not going to be any retail on the affordable housing pieces. So that's...
Will the schedule be such that there will be some services nearby?
Yeah, so in terms of services, I should state that MidPen itself, we provide amenities to our own residents. We are not just the developer of affordable housing, but we also are our own property managers and provide resident services. So for example, for our family projects, we're gonna have after school programs on all our family phases. We do after-school programs, programs for adults, whether it's financial literacy or whether it's nutrition education. Those are all programs that MidPen does on all their family projects. On the senior programs, we'll similarly have services for our seniors and programs. This is a new, this all of Brooklyn Basin is just right now getting off the ground. So there's really nothing that's been built there. The first project that broke ground is Parcel B, which is the market rate development. So that's already under construction. We're not going to be the first underground. But eventually, those amenities, the retail spaces, commercial, are going to be there over time. And MidPen itself is going to provide some of the services for its own residents.
Thank you.
Yes, so.
Did you have a question?
Yeah. So my question, and the 50% tenant in common interest, how was that determined?
So I can
start and I'll finish.
Right, we can tag
in. If you give us your
again, Krista Katz-Mulvey, yeah. Housing and Community Development with the City of Oakland. The city purchased the parcels, actually parcels F and G, in 2014 in the summer for $21.5 million. And earlier this summer did a swap for parcel A instead because we did not want the affordable housing developer to have to build the 42,000 square feet of retail and 400 commercial spaces on parcel G. So the purchase price for the parcels is considered $21.5 million, and OHA is planning to put in $10 million, but also significant project-based vouchers, at which point I think we decided that a 50% interest made sense.
Okay, 50%. One more question. Will any of that be for veterans?
There are no set-asides specifically for veterans. There is nothing saying that there couldn't be set up.
There's nothing that I'm aware of in the cooperative agreement that stipulates set-aside for veterans, but that's not to say that in the future there might be cause to do so.
Right. Yeah, and what I'll also add is even though there's no specific set-aside, that doesn't mean that some of the residents that apply for the senior units or the family units could not be veterans themselves. But there's not a specific set-aside. At this stage, we're following the cooperation agreement that's in place that dictates the affordability ranges and some of the ranges between senior and family units that should be prescribed for the project.
Okay. Thank you.
Did you have any more questions?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm glad to see all the green space around it. Mm-hmm. I was curious, when you say less than significant level, you know, significant level said it's less than significant, are there any disadvantages to the natural habitat of the area as we proceed with the construction of this project? Like, I know you're recreating the natural habitats, but what's happening to them now while this project is happening for the next, what, 5-7 years? Who's going to watch out for the guys that are living there?
Nobody wants to take that question on.
Then we'll punt to you, Bill.
So this may be if you require greater details, I can contact the planning staff who's working on this, but the CEQA mitigation documents do require all sorts of conditions of approval in association with construction of the development. And there will also be, they're working currently on Shoreline Park. So there will be, with any construction deal, it's going to be a sort of mixed bag, especially while construction is in place, but they will be trying to mitigate that.
I mean, this is significant. This is not a little project
at all.
And we have like the estuary, the Channel Park, the South Park, Gateway Park. These are all open spaces that all of us can go and enjoy, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
So I'm just worried about what's there now and whether we're caring for them as we move forward.
And they do have a temporary bay trail that's open while construction is going on as well.
I mean, we might need to go back and look. There's a whole 900-page document that stipulates a lot of requirements that are being imposed upon the master developer, that's ZOHP, Zarzion, and Signature, as well as MidPen. That include measures to mitigate their impact, to minimize the impact on all sorts of things, including the natural environment and habitats. So that might be a question that we'll have to get back to you on.
And as I'm rereading it, it's a less than significant level, which is a good thing, right? Right? Yeah.
Please. Yes, I just wanted to jump in, Michelle Brewer with Gold Farm and Littman. There are a number of mitigation measures in the MMRP that Denny discussed, the mitigation monitoring, mitigation monitoring and reporting program. I'm looking at it on my phone. And it goes into great detail as to how every animal has to be surveyed, bats, salmon, wildlife, and so fish and, I'm sorry, not salmon, fish and migrating salmonids, whatever that is. So anyway, there's a very long list of mitigation measures just on that point for the habitat that's there.
And I'm not going to beat this up, but during the full project, there's someone who's watching out.
Yes.
That.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, good. So, currently, there's no businesses on the site at all, so there's no business displacement. Is that correct?
I'll let others speak, but I think it's empty.
Yes, the whole site is empty?
Both the affordable housing parcels are vacant, yes.
Thank you. And concerning our timeline for completion on the apartment complexes that we are going to be partnering with, how is it in relation to the rest of the construction? Is it in the beginning or towards the end compared to the rest of the complexes?
Right. So, like I said, one project has already broken ground, which is Parcel B by the market rate developer. I believe that's
Parcel B. Okay.
Parcel B and Parcel C, which is next to Parcel B, it's was just entitled, and I believe they're working through their design to get it to construction ready, hopefully within the next year. The other parcels, Sarsian or Signature Group are the owners. They're marketing some of the other parcels so their developers can come in and develop those. I believe G is one of the parcels that they themselves, Signature, is planning to develop. I could see our projects, just based on our timeline, potentially being the next ones in line after Parcel B and Parcel C.
Okay.
So more, and if all goes well, as Denny was describing, all these projects are going to be competing for different sources of financing, including tax credits. Some of those are competitive, so we could see potentially breaking ground, base case scenario, on the first phase by the end of next year with our current schedule. But the four different projects are going to be phased over a period of about 6 years, is what we anticipate, with the first one potentially breaking ground late next year.
Okay. So B, G, then F and A?
The order is B and C, and then probably F, probably G at some point. So you'll see about just under 500 units in construction market rate with parcels B and C. Mm-hmm. And then parcel F will come in with its 211 units of affordable housing.
Okay.
And then basically a few years down the road, because we're relying on funding to come in for the city's contributions towards development, we'll see the other affordable parcels. So I think it's not at the very beginning, but
that's
it's certainly
what I was hoping. Yeah,
right. It's
that
certainly
it's sort of in
towards
the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. My last question is probably not a short answer, but I was curious about transportation to and from this area after this goes up. Have we talked to our transportation people?
Yes.
One thing I'll mention is that currently the Embarcadero is not being served by public transit. There are conditions with the master developer that along with their first development coming online, there's going to be a shuttle that's going to be in place, that's going to be servicing the area, that's going to be able to be utilized by all the residents. So we're in conversations with the master developer, with the city, and actually also with AC Transit, to look for the long-term provision of transportation here, but there's definitely going to be a shuttle in service for the residents that first move in here. Again, those are going to be the market rate residents.
As well as the affordable residents.
Correct.
And the shuttles to BART.
Yeah.
And we have such a congestion problem with Highway 80 right there. You know, it's
right.
You don't need to get on Highway 80 to get to Lake Merritt BART. You go down
Fifth Street.
Embarcadero.
Yeah.
Around. But people are going to work in other places, and they have to come mm-hmm. home. Yeah. And this is 3,100 mm-hmm. folks, so it's going to yeah. be it's going to be a huge impact on transportation.
Yeah, and that's that was part of the CEQA process and doing that review. Mm-hmm. I'll also say that our second phase, our Parcel A, we're anticipating also competing for ASIC funds for the sources of that second parcel.
Good. For what kind of funds? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Cap and trade.
Yeah, the affordable housing and sustainable program that actually are some sources for funding where essentially you compete, you try to pair affordable housing projects with infrastructure projects that benefit essentially with the goal of lowering GHGs, so gas emissions. So we'll be looking at that and looking at what sort of partnership we can create potentially with IC Transit to try to make sure that we're being very efficient with the transportation here and the whole site. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for answering my questions.
Yeah. Commissioner Castillo, through the chair, just a quick comment. Thank you for those great questions. Of all the, the year 2000, we've never worked with a project here at Oakland Housing Authority where half the land is being dedicated to open space. I believe it's 32 acres. We've never seen that. The environmental cleanup plan, we were working on it today with Christian, the city, and our attorney was there along with Denny and others. The cleanup plan is quite extensive. They've been working on it for many years. And the mitigation includes reestablishing wetlands, which is fabulous. And, of course, that's going to take a lot of probably more cleanup. I believe there's two marinas planned. And as you mentioned, the three parks. So I heard you say that, but I just wanted to comment. We've never seen this much open space that would be open to the public, not just to those that live at Brooklyn Basin.
Thank you.
Yes.
Just one last, I'm not sure if it's a question or a comment, but I think that it's fair to describe this as a mixed income community, mm-hmm. maybe. But I also know that mixed income communities are really challenging and that they take a lot of intentionality for everybody to feel like they actually belong in that space. And I like the Hive as much as anyone else, but I think about what retail may be attached to a signature development, and just wondering about what is anticipated or planned for in terms of kind of cohesive planning or input from a range of perspectives in terms of what will happen either for access to the site or for utilization of the site so that it doesn't end up feeling like it mostly benefits market rate owners or renters. And I, from my own personal work, know that that takes a tremendous amount of intentionality mm-hmm. and just wondering if there is any talk about that in this development.
And that would be for MidPen more than anyone.
And I did want to say that the developers are working closely with Oakland Parks and Recs because the parks will be turned over to the city. So there is consideration for having them be usable spaces for residents throughout Oakland. I think it's not even just for residents within the development. There's been a lot of concern about making sure that the shoreline is open to all residents as well. And then on the sort of retail side, the planner said that Parcel G includes space for a grocery store. Now, what the tenor of that grocery store is still up for grabs. I'll let Paula take over.
And again, Phil Neville, I would add another comment. For some years, the city has done real extraordinary work with on the community benefits issue with a number of neighborhood groups, several of which Denny mentioned in her presentation. So I think, Commissioner Griffith, up to this moment, I think a lot of the work has to have been related to getting this project going and getting affordable parcels designated. And the city worked hard on that. We were not involved in that, but we've met with some of these, the people that represent the community groups have come to meetings we've been in. And I think you're right. I think we have to do more thinking forward, since we'll probably be the third phase here will probably be affordable, as I understand it, and integrating those families into that development so that it's not we versus they and that the community benefits in the parks and all the other things are accessible by everyone. So I don't know that we probably haven't done any thinking about that, to be very honest.
I think it's an extraordinarily good point to make. If you're going to build a community and create a new community where you have luxury condos going up next to the river and you have very low and extremely low-income families living next door, at what point do they feel inclusive in that community? Do there shops they can actually shop in? And to make sure that we bridge and we have a plan in place when we create the affordable housing, to make sure we build bridges with the residents to the businesses and to the neighboring, and that they participate in things like community meetings, NCPCs, and that they don't get treated ostracized and those people don't belong here. And I think that that's a question for management, and that's why I just wanted to have MidPen be aware of it, that you're the folks who are going to have to deal with that issue, because it's not going to come up until they're occupied and leased. And it's something that I've seen myself as well in things that we've done. So I think it's a very real concern when you're dealing with these two extremes.
Can I add one point? I think that occupied and leased is late. I think it's a question worth considering now, like even in design or in other aspects, so that there's no physical distinction, so that, you know, all those things are already considered at the front end. It's hard to undo them and think about it later. That's all.
I just wanted to add that the project's going to be brought back to this board one by one. And so when you bring the LDDA back, that would be a time to have this conversation again. You have another bite at that apple. I just want to let you know that. Mm-hmm.
And I just also say that I'm grateful to the city for the switch of the plots that put one of the affordable on the water, which I think is really important, that they're not tucked in the corner. But I think we now have maybe effectively communicated that we really will expect that when it comes back, and to maybe have some plans in place beyond just the parks. I mean, I think you're speaking about the types of any kind of retail that goes on. As well, and maybe integrating the retail and outreaching and making sure that it is inclusive, and if their families, are there jobs for the youth and the adults in those retails? I think those are all things that we can talk about before we come back for a specific phase. One thing you didn't mention that I believe is true is part of one of the old warehouse buildings is being preserved specifically for a market or retail. I'm not sure which number or letter it is. I don't know if anyone knows, but it looks like it's around C or D. I don't know.
Yeah, it's around C and D. I think it's, is it part of the Shoreline Park?
It's the terminal.
The 9th Avenue terminal.
It's adjacent to parking. It's adjacent to Parcel B. It's what used to be there, the 9th Street, Terminal 9. That's part of it's going to be preserved.
Yeah. And that'll be part of the retail section, I believe, or market.
May I ask one more question?
You may, yes.
Is where's parking for the employees and for the residents and for the folks that are coming temporarily to this space? Where's that at?
We can speak to the affordable.
Only to the affordable?
The park, we're not doing the rest of it, but the parking is underneath in a podium.
For public parking?
No, I'm sorry, for the residents.
So there's stores going in.
We're not planning the stores, so I'm trying to answer what we know
about. I understand.
Which is the parking for our residents.
Okay.
Christia?
So just, so there's a minimum of 3,950 parking spaces, which will include some parking for the retail and sort of guest parking. One of the reasons, there will be a 400 parking space garage on parcel F, and included with the retail, which is one of the reasons why we didn't want the affordable housing folks to have to build that. Would have been really expensive to build and then get reimbursed.
Okay.
Okay, Commissioner Hurd has another question.
And this is just a clarification question. The JOA, I just want to understand how that's going to work.
The JOA is the Joint Ownership Agreement, and that's an agreement between the Housing Authority and the City of Oakland. And it stipulates the terms of our ownership, our joint ownership of both parcels A and F in perpetuity. So we will continue to own, and we will ground lease back those subdivided parcels to MidPen.
Okay, so we'll ground lease them back. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, I just have one question. Do we know what kind of liability would accrue to the authority with the acquisition of this land in conjunction with the city?
In terms of acquiring the parcels?
Yes. Because we're actually, right. I mean, once we invested $10 million, we're actually owning the land, right? Right. I mean, right. We're owning half of the land.
Right. So I think part of the answer to that is we get, as half owners, we have half liability for owning the land with the city. One of the things that will happen, though, is a lot of that will be turned over once the phases are complete to MidPen, who own the improvements. Okay. Because the limited partnership will own the improvements, and we just own the underlying land. So once construction is done, I think our liability is reduced once they get the units online. I don't know if Michelle Brewer wants to address that.
Well, I was probably thinking more of, you know, the stuff like toxic gunk that might be lurking in the ground and then suddenly pops up in the future and everybody goes, oh, wow.
So, again, Christia Katzenlevy, Housing and Community Development, City of Oakland. So back when we purchased the properties in 2014, you can imagine that we were quite concerned as well. And so we, through our environmental consultants, negotiated an extensive series of cleanup requirements, ongoing monitoring and mitigation. There's a pollution liability insurance and a prospective purchaser agreement with the State Department of Toxic Substance Control that provides us with some reassurances as long as we don't disturb anything untoward, that they're not going to come after us for things that are unknown. Also, we have excess liability insurance that we're part of and some environmental escrows set up to do ongoing monitoring and maintenance over the long term to purchase an extension on our liability, our pollution liability insurance, and also to do the, we didn't want to install a vapor barrier and then have the development puncture that with, it didn't make any sense. So there's an escrow set aside for that as well. And all of those are items that we've offered to assign a partial interest in to OHA.
I see. So let me see if I understand then. So both the city and OHA would then share equally in any liability that were to emerge from down below. Is that correct, or is that being worked out?
It's being worked out. It's a subject of quite a bit of negotiation and discussion now. Right now we're talking about this.
Okay. So we're still working on that. But what has happened is there has been a deep analysis done of the soil.
Correct.
Already.
Yes.
Mitigation measures have been already taken.
Right.
And there is also liability insurance available, right? I mean,
correct.
So if someone sells liability insurance, they must have some level of confidence, I hope, that that they won't have to do a payout on that.
Right. Correct.
Okay, and we'll get to look at that again later as we move forward, right? I mean, is that...
Not, the issue will be negotiated as part of the final agreement for the sale of the properties.
The purchase and sale agreement.
Yeah, so it's part of the purchase and sale. So we have to do it now under this agreement, because whatever we put into the ownership agreement will become what the ownership agreement is.
Oh, okay, right.
And then so the further transfers will be for the development and long-term.
Okay, so what we're going to be approving tonight then is we're going to authorize the commitment of up to $10 million.
Yes.
To buy the land, right?
You're going to authorize the, and you're going to authorize the commitment and expenditure of that, those funds, and also you're going to give me the authority to enter into a purchase and sale agreement and joint ownership agreement for the acquisition of the land, and that is up to my discretion, and that's partially if there's any major changes or something related
I
to
see,
this.
I see.
I'll bring back.
Okay.
In general, we're taking 50% of the ownership and we'd have 50% of the liability.
Yes.
And the question, I guess, before us is how far that would go back and how far that would, you know, or not. But once we moving forward, we have that. Mm-hmm. It's any past stuff that I think we're in the current discussions with.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Okay. Good. Thank you. No more questions. Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the acquisition and joint partnership.
Yeah, let me read the title real quick.
Okay.
Just so to clarify the record, we are on item B, which is consideration of a resolution considering the environmental effects of the execution of a purchase and sale agreement and joint ownership agreement for the acquisition of a joint interest in land with the City of Oakland for the development of affordable housing at Brooklyn Basin and the execution of a master housing agreement by the City and Midpen Housing Corporation and adopting mitigating measures and findings regarding the project pursuant to the California Environmental Quality Act. And we have it moved by Commissioner Jung Lee.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Okay, carries.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioners, moving on to item C is the related item.
There's a second item.
And item C is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to commit and expend up to $10 million in HUD funds to purchase a 50% tenant in common interest from the City of Oakland in parcels A and F at Baldwin Basin, Brooklyn Basin, and authorize the executive director to negotiate and execute necessary agreements to assist the financing and development of 465 affordable units at Brooklyn Basin.
I move the resolution.
Been moved.
I second.
And seconded. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Carries.
Thank you, Commissioners. I think generations will thank us for getting affordable housing in Brooklyn Basin. I appreciate your support.
Generations will thank us. Yes.
They will. You have an ownership presence for generations.
Okay. We are now. No, this is a wonderful project. Item D.
Item D. May sound a little familiar for those who were on the board in 2010 and 12. But let me read the long title for you. It's a consideration of a resolution approving and authorizing the executive director to submit a Section 18 disposition application for 253 units in three senior public housing site properties to HUD, and to also submit an application for tenant protection vouchers. In addition, the Board of Commissioners to approve the award of Section 8 project-based vouchers to Oakland Affordable Housing Preservation Initiatives Incorporated or other entities that can utilize 4% low-income housing tax credits. And I probably should have read the whole thing from not the one off the stage. We're low-income housing tax credits, and we'll have a general partner controlled by the Oakland Housing Authority for up to 77 units at Oak Grove North, 75 units at Oak Grove South, and 101 units at 1621 Harrison Street, and authorize the executive director to execute a project-based voucher housing assistance payment contracts, or contracts, for up to 40 years, including the initial term and an extension term. A really long title that does a lot. And we're going to kind of march through that, and then I'll tell you what I just read in terms of where we are. And I know that some of you have heard this before, so you know I put it all in one resolution because I think we need to move quickly to be awarded. So I'm going to – Dominic Anderson, our Director of Planning, Implementation, and Compliance, has a presentation that she'll walk through, including the amount of outreach we've done in the past month with the properties in our resident advisory board. Dominica?
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Dominica Henderson, and I will walk through a presentation that will describe what disposition is, what this action is that we're requesting authorization for, and I'll be free to address any questions should you have them. With this action, OHA is requesting authorization to submit a Section 18 disposition application for 253 senior units. It's three public housing sites: Oak Grove North, Oak Grove South, and Harrison Tower above us. And pending the approval of this disposition application, we will submit an application for tenant protection vouchers to HUD for the 253 units, so that those vouchers can be project-based in the three properties. We will also plan to transfer the sites to OPI or another partnership, another entity, so that they can utilize 4% low-income tax credits to keep the properties affordable for up to 40 years.
And just to interject, the disposition we've done, as you know, to OPI, we did 1,615 sites in 2009, which converted in 2010. Mm-hmm. In 2010, we approached HUD and filed a Section 18 disposition to convert all five of our senior public housing sites to project-based Section 8. HUD gave us a partial approval and partial denial of that, which we rejected because they were actually requiring us to sell these three properties at a market rate open bid sale to a private party and to give up the properties. We came back to the board. The board rejected that offer. We wrote to HUD saying we're rejecting your offer, and we actually would like to have a approval or denial of the application as submitted, which is what they're required. We have kept that in the annual plan since 2012. So every year, and I know some of you have brought that up and asked questions, why it's still there, because we felt like the application still had validity and HUD was required to give us a yes or no. Mm-hmm. In January, we started discussions with HUD, and they resulted in the Special Application Center contacting us later in the spring and us spending some time on the phone with them, walking through the old application, what would be needed, and submitting an application for the sites that we agreed were eligible and should probably be granted. What our application is really trying to do is to preserve these units, that under public housing operating in a deficit, they will never be preserved, that they are deteriorating, and you've approved in the budget $18 million to help restore the 77 units at Oak Grove North and the 75 at Oak Grove South. The actual cost of rehabbing those buildings completely is about $34 million. So it's not enough to do what is needed. So we're looking at this approach as an opportunity to take advantage of a moment in time, and that's this moment with HUD, and I think we need to move quickly. We understand that there's a much greater chance of us being awarded the project-based vouchers in this fiscal year, because they take the form of tenant protection vouchers and they're available, and that's how we can preserve these with that funding stream. And so having said that, I didn't give that intro, so I wanted to say before we got into kind of the weeds of what we're doing. So if we want to move through the slides.
Okay, can I just throw something in here? Mm-hmm. Because, I like just boiling things down to a very simplistic point of view. And just to test my understanding here, what this disposition is really all about is it's to swap the funding subsidy for all of these units from a subsidy that is always underfunding the units to a subsidy that will fund them properly.
That would be correct. It will triple the income. It also removes the declaration of trust, which allows us to get, in this case, we're recommending 4% low-income housing tax credits. We are recommending that they go to the existing OPI, who can care for the properties. The ultimate, which is where she is right now, mm-hmm. with the PowerPoint, is that it may get further, it may go into a limited partnership in terms of low-income housing tax credits, so it may then dispose further into another entity, which is why the language is a little odd. But the point of it is to leverage the 4% low-income housing tax credits into the deal, and we'll have a table later in the slide that'll show you how much money we can invest in this property and where we are. Dominica, do you want to move on?
Right, sure. Just a quick description of what disposition is. Disposition is a HUD process, as the executive director mentioned, where it will remove the public housing declarations of trust and that public housing designation. It also eliminates the public housing subsidy as operating subsidy as well as capital funds for those sites. And in this case, it will replace that subsidy with a project-based voucher subsidy. Disposition requires us to change the control of the properties from OHA to another entity. And OHA proposes to turn over control of the sites to OPI or another entity that can utilize 4% tax credits, as was mentioned, and who the general partner of that entity will be wholly controlled by the Oakland Housing Authority. And so as we go further in the disposition application, we will be able to negotiate the additional terms, and I'll describe some expected terms of the disposition as well. But we will work with HUD to make sure that what we intend to do is what ends up getting approved. Some of the reasons for the disposition is that there's a systemic underfunding of public housing. The operating subsidy is not enough to operate the properties. There are a high level of capital needs at the sites, and that those needs only get compounded over the years as they are unable to be covered by the amount of funding that we receive from HUD. There are ongoing and unsustainable operating deficits at the sites. There's an urgent need for renovations at the three sites. We've proposed a series of capital improvements at the Oak Groves that are included in our annual plan. And just the lack of subsidy really makes it very difficult to make those improvements. And also in the public housing program, which is different than in a voucher program, there's an inability to leverage non-HUD funding to be able to restore or meet the needs of those sites.
And so, really leverage anything but public housing funding, right. Capital fund, and there's no other way to put other money on it. Not even guaranteed loans or anything from HUD, nothing.
So those are some of the reasons that are the impetus for this disposition action. And there was a similar application that was submitted in 2011 that was approved, but it was approved with conditions that were not feasible for the agency. And so, as we mentioned, this disposition activity has been included in the annual plan for the past 7 years, past 5 years, excuse me. We consulted in 2010 with the residents very thoroughly, and have always included this as part of our annual plan process, so letting the public know that we do intend to make this action should it become advantageous for the agency. In 2017, a couple months ago actually, we consulted with both the Oak Grove sites as well as the residents of Harrison Tower, and we also met with the RAB on August 3rd and received a letter of support from the members of the Resident Advisory Board. In addition to that letter of support from the RAB, we received a letter of support from the Mayor, Libby Schaff, that explains that this is consistent with the Mayor's Housing Summit report and that she's supportive of this action as it will preserve affordability of these 253 units for low-income seniors for several years, decades in the future. The impact on the in-place residents, there are very few vacancies, so all three sites are pretty highly leased up, and we are doing our best to lease those other vacant units as well. There's going to be more housing choice. The residents will not be permanently relocated. No one will be displaced. There will maybe some temporary relocation required in order to complete some of the capital improvements on the sites. And also, residents will have a choice if they do choose to move away from the sites. But really what we will do is provide disposition counseling, relocation counseling, just to make sure that the residents are aware of all of their options when they're going through this process. The rent will still be calculated in a similar fashion, where it'd be 30% of adjusted income. And there ultimately will be improved living conditions over time. We'll have more income from the properties to be able to operate the properties and eliminate that deficit. And there are currently, just to let you know, there's only one family that is that we see as maybe over income for that the project-based voucher program, and so they will require a little bit more counseling, but all the other families we imagine will be able to transition from public housing to the project-based voucher program with no foreseen issues. For the family that is over income, we have an MTW activity that allows them to remain in place. They would just participate not in the project-based voucher program, but one of our local programs, but they would still not be displaced or asked to be relocated because of this transition. So the terms that we seek for this disposition are that the properties will be leased to a nonprofit corporation that will be able to operate the properties as project-based voucher sites. One thing that we'd like to mention is that failure to abide by the approval terms will result in a termination of that lease and return of the controls back to the Oakland Housing Authority. So the Housing Authority will, OHA will own the land, but the improvements will be owned by another entity. And the units will be subsidized with new Section 8 resources that will be awarded because of this disposition. And they be affordable to seniors at or below 60% of the area median income for what we see as 55 years compared to 40 years for the units in the public housing program, which are affordable to, as I mentioned, the income level a little bit higher at 80%. Oops, sorry. We imagine that the new occupants will be pulled from a site-based waitlist, similar to how the sites operate currently, and that will be either an established or a future waitlist on the project-based voucher side. Any significant action other than those that are detailed in the resolution that's before you would have to come back to the board for approval. And the MTW authorities that we have that we created back in 2010 for the first disposition will still apply. We still have all of those in our portfolio. And so should we need to utilize those activities in order to mitigate any possible negative impacts to residents, or should we need to modify any of the, just make anything around the disposition, make it so that it's more comfortable and more smooth for transition for those residents, we'll be able to use those activities. So we have several that we created when we did the initial OPI, disposition that also would apply in this case as well.
These were actually sent for Bridget, who's couldn't make it tonight. This is just the financing strategy of one way we can look at it, and it's taking advantage of the low. This is our best strategy, I think, having looked at it in different ways, and that's applying for 4% low-income housing tax credits for the Oak Groves. So we're not talking about Harrison. It would enable us to leverage a lot of not just the land value, but also tax credits into the money we already have, and it would result in us creating a limited partnership, which would further dispose the units into the partnership for a period of time, but OHA would still own the land. The next slide. So I want to show you how the numbers kind of roll out if we can do this rather than us just writing checks, which is what the public housing only allows us to do. If you look, we've done scenarios with Oak Grove North and South, which are our biggest priorities, and then possibly Harrison down the road. We have a total rehabilitation cost for the Oak Groves at $36 million. That's the top part of the table. And it includes some, you know, soft costs in terms of reserves and developer fees. But it's a lot of money. Even if you were to take the developer fees out, you're still at $30 million. In terms of money leverage using the 4% tax credit model, we have rehab equity at $13 million, acquisition equity at $5 million, and total equity raised $18 million. So we have a funding gap of just $18 million, which is the money we currently have, obligated to do the whole project. So we would be able to move forward with getting the entire project rehabbed, all the units upgraded. You know, I think it's really important all this so that we're not asking any resident to move. They'll be in place, they may have to temporarily move while we do the rehab. And that was the majority of the questions at the public meetings in at Oak Grove North and South, was just, when are we going to start? You said you were talking about doing this a year ago. Will we have to move? Have you gotten it figured out? The majority of tenants remembered and were there in 2012, so this is not new to them, because then we've been back several times. And if you remember, even when we rejected before I brought it to the board, I went and met with everybody again to say this is what I'm recommending, because I this is ridiculous, and got their support. Harrison is another one. We're not certain whether this is going to be something we want to pursue, but we wanted to run the numbers of how we could. We took a $24 million total project, but the rehab project, the actual things we need to get done in a big way, are about $18 million, and how it would pan out to reposition this whole portfolio and lessen kind of the amount we'd have to put in. So for a $24 million need, we get $14 million that we'd need to raise, and both those are doable, I think, for us.
Why is it we have to do rehab on Harrison? That's the one
Harrison
next
is
door,
interesting, because
right?
We're not certain yet. And that's why we're going to come back. And in our
that's
application, we're not going to
new building.
No, this is upstairs.
Oh, this is this one upstairs.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And there are urgent needs here. One of the things we desperately need to do is redo the 13-floor elevators, which are causing us a great deal of grief.
Yes.
And it's those have to be done, immediately. So we're going to do what it takes to make sure our elevators work. And that's there are other challenges with the plumbing and the hot water in this building that go on and on. So it's rehabbing the 10 floors above us of senior housing.
Including this?
Not including this. This we're doing. Okay. It's the units above us.
Okay.
Yeah. And hopefully my office and several of our offices will quit leaking. But we have the hot water leak issue downstairs. So the timeline. Do you want to walk them through?
Sure. We expect to be able to submit, pending your approval, the application within the next month, and we would then wait for approval of that application. Once the application is approved, we would then immediately submit an application for tenant protection vouchers. We expect that HUD would approve that application for vouchers, so then the OHA would award project-based vouchers to OPIE
or whatever entity can do the 4% if we go directly to the 4%. And that actually is an issue that we'll need to negotiate with HUD after we submit the application. We are asking for the immediate disposition to OPIE, because OPIE actually has some operating resources to help with the elevators and things in the interim. And it will allow us to stabilize the families in place, get through the Section 8 eligibility before it would ever go into a longer-term deal where it's repositioned into some other partnership. And we like that control for our residents. We know what flexibilities we have to make sure if we have one person who's over income and they would have a large rent increase. If you remember in OPIE, we mitigated that and we gave them a 5% increase every year until they reached the HAP. So we try to mitigate that. And OHA through OPIE, I think, is better suited to stabilizing the property prior to its perhaps final disposition into a tax credit deal. HUD may not agree to that. They might want us to wait, at which point we'll still do what work we can, but we would rather have the increased income immediately from the voucher program and use that to stabilize the property.
We would award the project-based vouchers, transfer ownership, and then the last part we see is that we would lease up those vouchers, and each unit would have to go through and get approved under an HQS housing quality standards inspection.
Yeah, so, which we can do all at once now, so you've given us great flexibility with that in the MTW plan, so we can do it ahead of time, and then Section 8 can go to the eligibility. In terms of relocation, we don't want anyone necessarily to ever have to leave. If someone did want to move out onto a tenant-based program from the Oak Groves, though, we would actually help them facilitate that, and we'll give them some help doing it. What it would help in us in the restoration is it would make units available, because if we get a couple of stacks, that apartments above each other, we can rehab those and then move people into those. Yes. Rehab those and move people in. It would be help mitigate the disruption. So, OPIE getting it early and allowing all that to take place would actually benefit the restoration project.
And after that, that's it. I think that we have some images and
The elevator image is from the Oak Groves because we restored three of the four elevators. One still remains. And the other work that was done during ARA was we painted the building, and we also rehabbed the community room on the third floor here. The buildings are both very close to each other in downtown. It's accessible to BART. It's very, the properties, the folks who live there are very happy living there. When we went through the original survey, when we were proposing this, only two residents said they might be interested in moving. Mm-hmm. So out of the whole population, people don't want to move. And that's where we feel we may have to temporarily move folks into a hotel unit while we rehab their unit. But I'm grateful to be able to revisit this with HUD. I'm grateful for the conversations and this window in time that we may have to switch the public housing subsidy for a Section 8 voucher. And that's, I think, all our report. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was trying to wrap my head around this. So if HUD approves it, then you can designate who you would sell it to. Does it still have to be sold at market?
No. Our application is doing a negotiated sale at below market for $1, and they're guaranteeing affordability for 55 years.
And wouldn't all housing authorities want to do this, or all the moving to work agencies want to do this?
No, everybody can do it. I did this in L.A. before I came up here.
Okay, so it's who gets to the bank first?
The disposition, Section 18 disposition process was originally an avenue that was used by this agency and is the largest one in the country that has ever been approved, and that was OPI. Prior to that, the next largest was San Diego with 1,200 units, and prior to that it was Los Angeles with 687 units, which I know because I wrote the application. Mm-hmm. It was not taken advantage of to the extent it probably should have been by other folks. They rely on an allocation of tenant protection vouchers. If they're not available, you have to make your whole application condition on that award, as we will. If we don't have the vouchers, we're doing nothing. Uh-huh. So that has derailed it. There was a position by one congresswoman in Southern California who strongly advocates for full funding for public housing but hasn't been successful at delivering that, mm-hmm. that this process gets shut down. The previous administration did shut down the process. This application is the last remaining one, our previous one that was left alive under the old rules. A new rule came out that grossly restricted it, mostly because they wanted to preserve tenant protection vouchers for the RAD deal, the Rent Assistance mm-hmm. Demonstration Project. RAD deals have not utilized the vouchers to the extent that they thought they would, so the vouchers have been left on the table mm-hmm. significantly this year. And the new administration, looking at deregulation, and the Deputy Assistant Secretary who oversees this process actually called me asking for advice on how they should go back to the old rule and what it should read. And that's the second after we'd approached with this, looking for advice on how to change disposition in a more realistic way. By shutting down disposition for the past roughly 5 years, they've built up some tenant protection vouchers that aren't being used.
So
whether those survive the next funding cycle as of October 1st is the reason that we are moving very rapidly.
And what happened to Adele Court?
Adele Court, you know, I've begged and pleaded for, 9 months about that one? The original application included Palo Vista, which is 100 units, and Adele Court, the cutest little property in the Laurel District with 30 seniors who love it there. They determined it didn't meet a certain threshold of eligibility if severely distressed. So we have had to pull that one back. I made a case that it was a portfolio and it should be managed together because it's managed with Harrison. They're just not necessarily, I know I can get this if we submit it, was basically what came back. We know these meet the thresholds, is mm-hmm. what the Special mm-hmm. Application Center told us. And if we wanted to try and fight for Dell, we're welcome to apply, but it would take them time.
So
it leaves us with 130 units of senior sites that are under the public housing program that need something done with them.
Right.
What that would look like maybe is another application if we're able to get a new notice that has something more acceptable in terms of the disposition process, Section 18 disposition process, that could convert it. I would certainly be open and will pursue that when it's available for Adele because it's an outlier now at 30. For Palo Vista, it's adjoining Lockwood Gardens, another public housing family site, next door is a senior site. It's one contiguous piece of property. So I think at some point in this agency's future, we'll start talking about how we're going to redevelop that, increase the density in that community. It's certainly not on the table now. But when it does, we will go back to HUD with a redevelopment plan for that community. And I think it's will be both at the same time. So that one, I think we're better off. We also, through our capital fund and Mr. Bailey, in our Force Account construction crew, rehab that entirely using ARRA money in 2009 and 10, which is actually why HUD said it wasn't eligible, because it's in good shape. And it is. Our problem is we run an operational deficit in the management of the properties. And these are all under contract management, by the way, so it is not our internal management costs that drive that. It's just the reality of the Bay Area that we can't manage. The cost of management here is so much higher than what RAD would even allow if you can't underwrite it with city funds or some other tool. You can't afford to do the work and manage the property, and we'll continue to operate at a deficit, as we did in the budget cycle. If you remember, the amount of money of MTW money we're moving over to keep our public housing program solid, this will help alleviate that in future years.
Right. Answered a lot of my questions. Thank you.
I just wanted to ask, just in the language of the resolution, three public housing senior sites, but it doesn't say conditional award of how many project-based vouchers. It's probably a little thing, but I think I would like to know that it's one for one in there somewhere.
Yeah, it is. We'll request, and one of the things we do is they could determine that one unit isn't eligible because it's vacant right now. They changed the rules about that.
Oh.
So then we would put one of our own vouchers on it. So if we had a vacant unit at the time that they approve it, whenever that is, it sort of gets a stamp in time in their system. We're going to request the full amount of vouchers, mm-hmm. one for one. If a unit happens to be vacant at that time, we could, because of the new rule, end up losing it. The old rule used to say that it had to be vacant for more than like 24 months, because you're dealing with properties that are severely distressed, and you got all the units. Now it's a real point in time. So we are, and Anna Kadanovskaya couldn't be here tonight, who oversees this, but we've been working with the management company to make sure we stay fully leased for the reason you just said, so we can get every possible voucher.
Okay,
the number
so
of voucher
it's
awards,
intentional
though,
that we're not putting in a number.
Yeah, because we're going to request the full amount.
You're going to request.
Which would be 77 units at Oak Grove, 75 at Oak Grove South, and 101 units at Harrison.
Yeah. All right.
Because we'll request them even for the manager units in case we...
It just wasn't in the resolution.
Yeah. And the reason I just told you is it's a full amount, and yeah.
You know, I just have one question here that's kind of silly, but is there any reason that we have to use the word disposition in
yes,
public discourse?
I totally agree with your sentiment. Yes, because it's the title of the section. It's HUD. It's a HUD formal. It's a term of art, as they say in the legal profession.
I see. So we can't call it.
Call it conversion.
We can't call it subsidy shift.
I asked years
or something.
Ago that very question, yes. Adamantly. Can't I just say we're converting? Because
okay.
What we propose to do is convert.
Because that is certainly putting a marketing burden on us.
It
to
is.
Be
and
able
you
to.
You know, and I've explained that actually in the rounds with the residents.
Yeah.
I'm very clear about the fact that disposition is disposing of the public housing designation, not the property.
Right. But it's an effort to get people to see
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so do we have a motion?
Oh, shit. I move the resolution.
Okay, it has been moved.
I second.
And seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? It carries unanimously.
Great. Thank you, commissioners. Hopefully this time. We will move forward.
And Eric, I just want to say that this is actually a really great example of perseverance, not giving up, and staying in touch with the pulse of what's going on at HUD. I mean, this is a really, really wonderful thing that is going on here and that we're getting done, because this kind of action is needed to be able to make sure that these units are preserved for the future. So nice job.
Thank you,
Mr. Johnson.
And thanks to all the staff who put up with me doing this over the past month. Moving on to our next item.
Okay, item E.
The next item is consideration of a resolution authorizing authorizing the executive director to enter into contracts for an initial period of 2 years with 3 one-year option terms with Renoir Staffing, Wolberg, Michelson and Personnel, Act One, Apple One Group, SVS Group, and HR Management for temporary as-needed employment services in a combined amount not to exceed $3 million over the five-year period. And we have our new HR director, who is settled in now and ready to move forward, Drew Felder. I will turn it over to you.
Good evening, Commissioner. My name is Drew Felder. I'm the director of your department here. So one of the things that I would like to point out right at the beginning is that temporary services...
Can you make sure you... Yeah, the mic... Is the red light on?
No.
That's better. All right. Drew, take it.
All right. So... Temporary services are not a preferred method of taking care of our vacancies or any type of the work that we need to do. And to that end, you'll notice in the resolution memo, it mentions that in 2010 and 2011, we had about $1.7 million worth of temp use, and that is down to 2016, 2017 to about $270,000. So that's a very, very significant decrease. Actually, if you look at fiscal year 2014 through 2016, it's actually that combination is still less than that 1 year of use. And in this year, we've only had about 3 temporary services employees active at any given time, which is down from upwards of 10 before. So that's very significant. And there are several reasons why I was looking for the referral looking for RFPs for temporary services, because one of the things that I think haven't been taken advantage of is our ability to leverage the business partnerships that we have with temporary service agencies and are employing our residents. So one of the things I'm looking forward to pioneering or spearheading is trying to develop a partnership between our FCP department and the temporary agencies that we're contracting with to see if we can make some type of bridge to see if we can get some of our residents employed. So kind of to give you a little bit of a background about how temporary services they work, there's a pool typically that different agencies or different organizations will kind of look into to see if there's anybody that's viable to bring on board. So by having these 5 different temporary services companies, there's basically 5 different giant pools that the residents could possibly get into that all these different companies in the area can look to see if they can possibly come on board. And it's also important to note that, as I stated in one of the presentations that I did before, that about 36% of our current staff is ready to retire at any given point. And even though it benefits them to give a lot of notice, sometimes that's not necessarily possible or they choose not to. And what that does is that creates a very sudden vacancy, and it could be in any position. So we don't really know at any given time when that might happen. And these temporary service agencies allow us to kind of fill a gap or give like a little bit of a Band-Aid until we can have a full-blown recruitment to really get somebody into the full-time regular position. Is there any questions about this? Or?
Good. Do you have a question?
Yeah. It's how much is that per year for 5 years? I was trying to do the math on it. Is it like $600,000?
Approximately, yes.
So if we're only spending $273,000? Why are you asking so much?
Right. So for a fiscal year, 2016, it was only $270,000. But the reason why we're asking for that amount in part is because we kind of don't know what's going to happen next. And I don't think that the previous years, given the ability for our employees to retire, is going to be a good judge moving forward of what might possibly happen.
So you're anticipating a $200,000 difference?
We could.
Yeah, very well
possible. Yeah, going back, and we didn't do the years going back, but going back, we had bills in excess of, you know, 800 to a million. Yeah. And the only thing that could drive it, and I think Drew's right about it, one is this is what the contracts we're replacing them was the same authority. But we want to be prepared. We have an aging workforce who's retiring, and in between the recruitments, we need to bring people, sometimes highly skilled people that cost
more money.
More money.
I mean, you were very adamant to bring those temporary positions down.
Yeah.
That was one of the things you thought we were out of control on, we needed to bring that down.
And we did,
down.
Considerably.
Yeah, you did, considerably.
But if we do get vacancies, we do have to backfill the essential positions, and Drew was nervous about being able to do that without mm-hmm. some contract authority, even if we don't use it,
right.
You know, just to make sure that we have it available.
And I just didn't see the normal, this is in the line budget and we put aside this much money. Is this any different than what we've budgeted for?
So what the amount is for is the same that has been, I think, for the last board resolution, and the one before that was actually for $5 million.
Okay.
That's not the expectation of what we're
going to spend. And no, we don't budget for this the way you're talking, because usually the temporary staff are paid for out of staff salaries of the staff who are not there. So, you know,
right.
if you have someone making $60,000 a year, and they're not there, you have a vacant $60,000, that's where they get charged, and the budget gets moved
towards
over.
Towards the
yeah.
salary of the person that is not there.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yep.
Okay.
Or out, temporarily out, yeah.
Okay.
A long-term
okay.
leave.
Thank
it's
you
a lot
much.
Of money, and I would, but to your point, we did, in 2010-11, we spent $1.7 million on temp yeah. services, and now we're averaging about $270,000, $300,000. And that's the point to manage to. Why I like to have the authority is you never know what you need, and if we need to move quickly, we want to be yeah. able to move quickly. And if you take the amount and divide it over 5 years, it's not mm-hmm. as large as it seems.
$600,000 a year?
Yep. Yeah. Well, considering it was 1.7 in 2010 alone.
I understand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a wide gap between what we are spending and what we're setting aside.
It is. Right. And you're right to point that out, and I think that we do make sure we owe the board, particularly through the budget process, what they actually were and how many
I appreciate that.
How many temporary employees we actually have on board. Yeah.
Thank you. Good work.
Thank you.
So
just
one question. One, when I read this, I didn't realize 36% is over 50 years old. Mm-hmm. That stood out to me. And that's a lot of knowledge.
That's a lot of knowledge of an experience that the agency has so
yes.
benefited from over the past 5 to 10 years. And I'm telling you that it's going to be a changing time.
Yeah.
You know, we benefit so much from the experience and the depth
yes.
of years of commitment people have made to this agency. And seeing them retire is both a blessing and a curse mm-hmm. for us. And we need to really adapt to that. Training is equally as important. One of the things we've implemented is the OHA University, where we
yeah.
are trying to help our staff enter. They apply to be in the university. It's a three-year program, trying to grow staff within and make sure we can help keep the kind of next generation of folks coming up in Oakland Housing Authority, give them some help in terms of cross-training.
Well, I'm glad to see the Section 3 that we're going to be utilizing that. Yeah, so thank you.
Any further? Yes.
Comment and then a motion. I appreciate your proactiveness on this and also the idea about creating relationships so we could get some of our residents into their businesses.
Thank
and with
you.
That, I move to approve this request
move
for entering into contracts.
I'll second.
And seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? Any abstentions? Carries unanimously. And I must say that it does indicate that OHA has done a fine job of retaining people.
Yes.
Yep. They seem to not want to leave. Okay, so we're on to item F.
Item F is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to execute a two-year contract with two additional one-year option terms with Conflow Services, Asbestos Management Groups, and Western Abatement for asbestos mold and bacterial abatement services at Housing Authority owned and managed properties in a combined amount not to exceed $400,000 for the initial two-year term and $200,000 for each additional one-year option term if exercised. This item is related to Capital Improvements Department. Mr. Bailey's here for any questions as well, if you want to come up, Mr. Bailey. We do asbestos abatement on selected units that are going major rehab. There are going to be some other environmental abatement, even on the office rehab we're doing on the first floor here. And in addition, when we take a whole building, and we're currently working on 94th and 95th, we do major abatement as well. This is for the major renovation for units, if I understand correctly, primarily.
Yes.
It's an extremely expensive operation per unit for us, but it needs to be done. So Mr. Bailey's bid out the services to try and get us a better rate. Do you have anything you want to add, Mr. Bailey?
Yes, this is our first opportunity, instead of taking a long time to go through the three-bid process. Now we will have a continuing rotational pool that we can choose from and expedite getting the units.
Yeah, this is creating a qualified list of vendors, which is different than bidding individual projects, which we've been doing, which is a smaller amount, and so it really doesn't come to the board.
I see. I see. So you can select any of these firms you want, depending on which one has the right skill mix or availability or whatever.
That is correct, sir.
Thank you. Good. Oh, question. Yes.
Hello.
Hi.
I note that we had four respondents. The fourth, which I guess scored lowest, was the only one that was a yes in all the categories of Section 3 and SBE and MBE and a WBE. And I'm curious if there's anything that we can learn, because I'm assuming that that's our goal, is to be able to hire.
It is one of our goals, but the reason the person wasn't included was primarily related to the exorbitant price they bid on the.
Okay. Well, there you go. Just curious.
Very high.
Okay, do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Okay, been moved.
I'll second.
And seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Although any abstentions, opposition, none, carries unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioners.
And we now move on to item G. I have no speaker cards.
I have none.
No one appears to be wanting to speak, so we're now going to move on to written communications.
Good evening. I have a few written communication things. It's the report that's included this month, really only, and then the additional board dates that we might have at the back. But I just wanted to go through a couple of highlights on the report very quickly, and then get to my announcements. One question that came up at the last meeting was Section 3 construction. So we had it looked at and audited. I wanted to figure an easier way to describe what was actually going on. And so Lenita Wheeler's staff went, and we now include a table. It's on page 6. The table is actually trying to tell you where all they are, all the construction-related folks who've gone through apprenticeship, pre-apprenticeship training, where they are. Some of them are not working in construction, which is the disconnect of some of that. But there was also some inaccurate reporting in the monthly report last month that's been corrected. And I think it's better to keep our list of participants. I did redact the names because I don't want them in any way available on the internet and targeted as being OHA residents when they're on the job site. Mm-hmm. But I do, so we have the participant numbers 1 through whatever, but we do have those records. The point is to really track it. And one of the things that I think you were making the point is if people are not working with this in construction environment, what are we doing with building and trades to talk to them about employing our people? And yes. I think the table allows me now to do that with the council. And I'll keep watching that. If you see anything, please let me know. And, you know, if I miss it, because I do miss things, as you know, when they slip through the report. But I think it's really imperative, since we've been asked so, and they've been so eager to have our residents trained as pre-apprenticeships, to make sure that they're being called from the hall and that they're being used whenever they're available. And I don't personally understand why a couple of folks are not working, given the amount of carpentry, for example, that is going on in the city. Are they choosing people out of the city prior because the market rate doesn't require a local hire? I think those are some of the questions I think that the council needs to address with us. So I'll be meeting with them, and then I will report back. But I thank you for saying that. Yeah. And I thank you for the question. It's hard to keep track of the programs and the individuals. And, the need of staff, the construction changes so much. So they're always kind of shuffling to update where they're working before the board report. Not that they're working, but if they're working in the trade, if they're doing another job, because as we know, it's a temporary employment scenario, and it's not easy to survive as an apprentice, period, because of the job-to-job nature. A couple things I want to highlight as well. FCP hosted its first domestic violence support group on July 20th in partnership with A Safe Place. 12 residents attended. The group will meet weekly to address the domestic violence, cycle of violence, types of abuse, and progression of abuse. And I thought that was a terrific new effort on our hat. In partnership with the Alameda County Health Department, FCP's concluded a six-week Cooking for Health Academy at Lockwood Gardens with 9 participants, which is, I think, part of our bigger mission of trying to make sure that we can create healthier communities and teach our folks how to cook in a healthier and wonderful way. This for the month of July only, we serve 380 summer youth lunch.
Okay.
So think about how many folks needed that. Snacks for 742, which is both pretty good numbers, I think, because we had 2 sites only. Lease compliance. I want to bring up something with leased housing and lease compliance. FCP has met with 8 families to resolve resident disputes, and lease compliance is part of the initiative that we began funding in this fiscal year, and we've created some interventions in leased housing, which are not unlike the site intervention team that's been working on Mark Schifferl's side of the shop for quite a few years. The effort is to try and really bring people in earlier and intervene in a better way to have better outcomes for everyone in terms of any people who have leasing issues on the Section 8 side as well. So just if you want to pay attention to that, they've met with 33 residents regarding lease compliance in Mark's side this past month alone. So there's a lot of work we're putting into that that often goes ignored by me because we have so many other things to talk about. And I've, as you know, I've been really an advocate about intervening early with site intervention and some resources and folks very, very early on before people get in underwater where they can't get out.
Right.
For portability, we have a total of 26 participant households ported from other PHAs into Oakland, which is dramatically more than we ported out, which I don't have the number in front of me. And there were 15 unabsorbed people, OHA residents in other jurisdictions. So if you think of unabsorbed, meaning we're paying the subsidy for them to live in another jurisdiction. Now, I just want to point out that's down from 10 years ago when there was about 1,300 folks porting. And what that meant to us is it meant we weren't serving Oakland because the neighboring jurisdictions were letting us port and they weren't absorbing. So that's corrected itself, in short, because of the leasing issue, but it also means we have more vouchers to put on project-based Section 8 developments and just issue in general. So it's, I think, benefited the city dramatically. In terms of leased housing, they have a program compliance team, and that's the one that actually was started this year. They focused on the analyst prevention and remedial action if necessary to prevent or correct program noncompliance by participants, and that's participants are both tenants and owners, by the way. If you participate in the program, you're both you could be a tenant or an owner, and we do both. In terms of program compliance, the program compliance staff work with all the leased housing teams as well as the Oakland Housing Authority Police Department and the Executive Office. The team conducted 31 client interactive meetings this month, resolved 23 late rent notices, and processed 23 proposed termination notices. Wow. So they're moving along. Additionally, the team resolved 50 police reports and has calculated year-to-date $187,172 in over-subsidy repayments. So in other words, they're subsidy repayments either to the landlord or the tenant. It could be either side. If the landlord accepted rent for someone who wasn't living there, we then request it back. And
good.
And that's it for the report. We're here for any comments or questions before we get into a few comments.
Yes,
sorry. So thank you for the detailed report on the trades. Mm-hmm. It's very helpful to see that.
I was wondering, given that we have an in-house construction crew, are we, from time to time, are we also able to hire some of our residents for work on our units?
And I don't know if Mr. Bailey may have had to leave, I think, but so I'll tell you how many we currently have.
Okay.
But I can get you that number.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, in reading the report, is the rent crisis situation getting a little easier?
I would say it is. And I'm saying that based on the number of people who are successfully leasing up in the jurisdiction of Oakland. And I think that we have not had as many extension requests as we used to. And I don't know if you want to comment, Michelle, Michelle Hassan, our director of leased housing, is much closer to the issue. But we basically started noticing a change in the spring. One of the lease-ups you might mention is regarding the successful BASH participants and when they leased.
Good evening, Commissioners. Michelle Hassan, Director of Leased Housing. We have definitely seen a slight change in terms of families being able to locate units. For instance, we've issued 60 vouchers for searchers in the last 2 months, and about 20% of them, 20 to 30%, have leased. At one time, we were down in the 12% range in terms of success rate. So we think families are doing more prep work in terms of acknowledging that they have credit issues. One area that we find that families don't understand is that they owe utility bills. Those will stop them from being able to lease units. And so many have worked with FCP to resolve some of those issues. So I think families are just learning more about the barriers that they have that cause them not to be able to lease units. So I think it's a small shift. We still have lots of challenges, but we also have landlords who are willing to work with us more. One, because of our landlord incentives that will be rolling out shortly. But a number of landlords really do care about low-income families, and they really do want to take rents that are within our payment standards. So that's also happening.
Well, I think the program that you have for preparing the families is really important. So,
and quite frankly, I'd have to give that to FCP. They do all of that work. So
thanks so much. That's so important.
Very good. So I'm just curious, what are the trends you've seen in rents, or can you not really tell?
If you look at the report this month, the percentage of the rent increases is probably less than we've seen previously. It was at around 16%. So what properties are renting for seem to have leveled out a little bit. They're not increasing as much as in the past. Owners are using that data to come to us and ask for rent increases. So if, in fact, that is decreasing, then we know at least the rents are not increasing at the rate that they were a year ago. But, again, there's still, 5 to 10 people waiting for units. And it's really the preparation of our families that will make them successful.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Hassan.
You're welcome.
On page 21, I was curious about where we are with the local assistance program. So it looks like all 289 units that are in this program are still waiting to be awarded. And then there's this environmental categorical exemption process. I was wondering if you could explain that a little bit.
So everyone that receives an award from us for project-based vouchers have to get a category exemption around a NEPA exemption. And that's noise, air, quality. And so they contract with a third-party vendor to do a review. And then the city is our basically compliance unit. And they then approve the project that it is categorically exempt from any kind of environmental issue. And so every one of the projects, whether they're for the existing PVV or for the local housing assistance program, have to get that completed. We had a recent project, you may know of the hotel that assists veterans. And so they actually got a review that required some mitigation in terms of windows for them, Operation Dignities Project.
Yes.
But the city did pass them with comments. So a number of the projects are moving forward.
Okay.
It looks like Operation Dignity is going to be the first project that gets an award.
So
we're very
glad.
Excited about that.
So maybe over the next 6 months?
No, not 6 months.
Okay.
The goal is to come back to you by the end of October with awards, not only for the LHAP Building Bridges project, but a number of awards through the project-based voucher.
Well, that's good to hear. I love this piece and reading about the changes that we're doing in our special needs housing and how our Shelter Plus Care program has just opened up significantly. It's good news. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Michelle.
Any other comments on the report? And I'll move on to just a couple announcements.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I've noticed on page 24 that the rates of occupancy are going up, including WAPI's units, and which is good that over time those rates are going up. I do wonder for Deep East and East Oakland, are there particular barriers that...
There was a very good, and I'm glad you pointed out. We didn't talk about that, but they have opened up. We had to open up the wait list for both of those. They did a massive, the way we do it, we opened the wait list. We processed in one day a large number of applicants, which have now gone over to Mark, which are in the process of leasing the available units in OPI. But you're right, we ran out of people in the three-bedroom, had to reopen the wait list, and have subsequently, I think, got everybody close to being lined up. One of the things I may start including in Mark's report, which we don't, which is a very interesting graph for both of these, which will show you leasing over a period of years. In different colored lines, and it's just a very informative way to look at what the numbers really mean in terms of where he is and improvement over time. Particularly with OPI, the improvement's been dramatic, with occasional dips on East and Deep East. They're traditionally harder to lease anyway. We get a lot of folks rejecting them, which is why we go through the wait list quicker there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can I just make a couple of comments? And the first thing I want to say, and I'm going to try to not get emotional when I do this, but I really appreciate reading the report. As a tenant commissioner, it helps me see how we really help our residents. And Lenita, I want to thank you for what you do in FCP. As I was reading this, and in reading regarding the Jobs Plus, 15 residents that completed assessments that enrolled in there. I was really thrilled to see that. And then the PAC, 6 new PAC program participants moved into their new units. I was really happy to see that. That's moms that are transitioning from prison, jail, right? Okay, and that's a serious thing. And them being able to move in with their kids, I was really thrilled to see that. So I'm sorry, I just get emotional because I care about that population, and they go through a lot when they're trying to find housing. So I'm really glad to see 6 new PAC moms moving into their places. And then the RAB, the Civic Engagement, the Leadership Development Program, 16 members, guest attendant resident advisory board. I get really thrilled reading this, and you just, I just want you to know, I take the time to read it because it helps me understand why I'm sitting in this seat as a resident. And the other thing I want to mention is the other population I'm really concerned about is our veterans. As I was reading here about the 26 veterans had boarded in, and we absorbed all of them. What about the residents that are still looking for a place? What do we do with those?
Say that one more time. Looking for what?
Okay, so, as I was reading this, we had OHA has a total of 326 fast vouchers. 270 are leased, 76 are searching, and 7 are in process.
Yeah.
Okay, so, let's see here. 4 vouchers and received 7 referrals from the Veterans Administration.
So the VASH program, you know, has been a huge struggle for us to get leased up, and we're finally getting close. And they've actually been fairly successful more recently in this year. And that was where I think 80% of the people who leased over the past 12 months, this was in May, leased in 3 months prior to May.
It did.
So the first three quarters of the year, very few people were able to lease. Mm-hmm. And suddenly around January, February, they were able to find units, which is great.
Yes.
We've got more vouchers on the street than we have VASH vouchers to serve. Uh-huh. We are still under-leased in the traditional program, which gives Michelle an opportunity to use those if we'd like. We have also already responded to an inquiry from the VA to see if we wanted to accept more VASH vouchers. Okay. But it's a challenging program.
Yeah.
Particularly in this rental market.
Yeah, so I would say, Michelle Hassan, Director of Leased Housing, one of reasons that these veterans are successful is if the VAMC, the Veterans Administration Medical Center, has their positions filled.
Okay.
And currently, they have their case management positions filled.
Okay.
And they also have a navigator. So when that is happening, then those veterans have individuals who are assisting them with housing search, dealing with any barriers, because that's the VA's role. And we know when, in fact, that's happening, because these veterans are leasing units. There are periods of time in 2016 where they did not have staffing in place. So they each have, the case managers have a maximum number that they can case manage, and if they have vacancies, they're just not able to assist the veterans.
Okay.
Currently, the team is, I think, there's one vacancy with the Veterans Administration. But the teams, the veterans and leased housing are working very closely. We have monthly meetings as well as weekly dialogue around the status of veterans. If they're missing paperwork, if they need something to assist them with getting the voucher, we're working together to make that happen. We're also trying to assist veterans to stay housed, because for every 5 that we house, 1 or 2 are at risk of being evicted. Non-payment of rent, noise nuisance issues. So it's definitely a balance that just requires a lot of time and effort.
Okay. And then one last question. Axe. I was reading about the Axe.
Oh.
The Axe, the new building?
Yes.
Yeah. Axeville Gospel at 94th and International.
Right.
With related.
Were 1,000 applications?
I think the total we received is 6,374 applications. 3,902 indicated they wanted the project-based voucher unit. So 4,000 for project-based. A total application was 6,374.
Right. Wow.
Ooh. It was in my comments for next.
Huge interest.
Yeah.
But part of it, I have to say, was the advertising they did was really good.
Okay.
I mean, they put together some very positive outreach for that site.
Okay.
And so families were interested in it. It's very much a place for families. And, you know, there is more shopping out in East Oakland now. So we were surprised how many families applied. But it just tells you about the need.
Yeah, for the number of units, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Director, thank you. Anita, thank you. All the staff, I just want to let you know how much I appreciate you. And I look forward to reading the report, and it kind of moves me to tears that we're helping so many people, because it's a challenge when you don't have housing, and we're making a difference in that area. So I just want to let you know how much I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you. So just a couple of announcements briefly. One is just following up, and this goes back to Lion Creek Crossing Phase 4. We got some transit-oriented development funding into that, which impacted Phase 5. if you remember, but the funding was awarded to the city, and there was a certain number of units that had to be produced, so we switched phase five from a home ownership to 125 units of senior to meet the commitment so that we could retrieve the grant money. I just want to say that Bridget Galka and Phil Neville have been hounding the city ever since that day, and that we received $3.8 million in city funds for that. So thank you, Phil. And
right.
Truly
good
appreciate
show.
It. So I guess that lessens what, you know, I mean, if we're, the $10 million now is down to seven plus developers. one thing I just wanted to point out that's going on is Senator Pat Murray, who is the ranking member of the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, has introduced a bill that I wanted to make you aware of. It's called the Affordable Housing for Education Achievement Demonstration AHEAD Act. And what it does is provide new funding for housing authorities for the planning implementation and for partnering organizations to increase our efforts in improving educational and lifetime outcomes for low-income children and youth. Really focused on what we're already doing. I want to let you know that I, along with Andres Manriquez, Lenita Wheeler, and Nicole Thompson, all attended the Council of Large Public Housing Authorities, had a two-day summit on education, and Lenita presented, and I was able to attend one of the 2 days prior to their meeting. Part of that was, again, to call to attention the need for, I think, housing authorities to really step up as a community provider and engage the education providers and see if we can improve the educational opportunities for our residents. Senator Murray has drafted the bill. I'm not sure if she had the press conference yet. Staff went up to visit King County to talk about some of our IT issues on August 3rd. She was going to have it that day, which isn't why we scheduled it that day. It just turned out, but then had to cancel it because they were, again, some crisis in Washington kept her there. But I did want to make sure it was on your radar of things. I think we may not even be eligible for this, but I just think it's about time they put some real money behind some real programs like we've been funding through your authority now for, what, 5 years?
Yes.
To develop an education program. This is federal HUD money that would be released to housing authorities to try and build the same bridges that we've built with OUSD and other education providers. So I want to just mention that in case you hear about it. Two more things. One is, don't forget, if you want to attend Kaboom August 9th on Saturday, we have a second Kaboom grant that has been awarded to the housing authority for Peralta Villa. That build day will be October 17th. We had the design day last Thursday. It was adorable. And we'll get the final designs for that, and we're prepping, and it's a really fun day. We can use any volunteers. Kaboom does ask everybody, including myself, who's attending, to go online to volunteer, so I'll send out a new email for the September 9th, and then there'll be another link for the October 17th, which is a Tuesday, which is hard for folks to attend. But anyone who can help plug in or anybody who wants to volunteer, please let me know. It should be a really fun day. I think it's really important that the community goes through the build and design, and they really own this playground. And I really want to thank Patricia Wells for putting all this together, and Lenita for hosting all the meetings and the resident meetings. It's a lot of work. But at the end, when we had the design day with the community at Lockwood, we had 50 children and 25 adults. Kaboom said they've never had to ask a partner not to have so many people at the design day, but they asked us. But that's us. You got to tell us, because we will fill the hall. And congratulations to you guys for doing that. It was great. And lastly, I just wanted to make one announcement that staff's really not aware of either, which is, you know, we had two awards of merit that we received for Avi Vista and for our community gardens, and I just want to let you know that we have won the National Award of Excellence for Design for Avi Vista. And we'll be getting that in October at the NARO. So thank you all. October 17th, Tuesday the 17th. And I'll follow up with emails.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so our next item would be reports of commission committees. And I think we want to report anything about ours. There's not really much to
report. Started meeting. I think that's sufficient.
I think that sounds good, yes. We're doing something.
Yeah.
And we will, I'm pretty sure we will schedule a closed session next time to chat about what okay. we're up to. But it's all good stuff. So next is announcements by commissioners. Do we have any announcements?
This is relative to our work. I've been sitting on the Homeless Advocacy Working Group that's loosely connected to the City of Oakland. It came about after they dismantled the village a while ago that was set up in West Oakland that had all these really great things going on for its unhoused population, and the city spent $75,000 just to demolish it. And out of that grew this group, and it's been meeting ever since, and I've had the opportunity to sit on it. You might be hearing of two proposals coming out of the City of Oakland to actually ask the city to designate three parcels across the city to create some kind of safe space for people to be on until they get to temporary housing and until they get to permanent housing. It could be tents, but they're more looking for smaller module containers, perhaps, or really nice looking houses that they know how to build now, plus services, plus community engagement. And so you might hear some talk about the village, and they're hoping to create three sites for this to happen, to be able to bring our people from the sidewalks into this safer environment. And I'm really looking forward to help to support that. The other thing is Michael Diamond, who I have yet to meet, is having a pilot development of pre-manufactured housing modules on some city-owned property, which is very interesting. I want to learn more about it, but I just wanted to let my commissioners know and staff know that this is happening at the city level to begin to address our homeless crisis. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you. Do we have any other announcements? Well, then, that means it is time for adjournment.
Thank you.
Do we have a motion?
Motion.
Motion to adjourn.
Seconded.
Okay, meeting is hereby adjourned.